Spirituality Challenged is a podcast recorded on Canadian Treaty 1 territory, and that the land on which we gather is the traditional territory of the Anishinaabe, Cree, Oji-Cree, Dakota, and Dene people, and the homeland of the Métis Nation. We acknowledge that our water is sourced from Shoal Lake 41st Nation, which is located on Treaty 3 territory. Spirituality Challenged respects the spirit and intent of treaties and treaty making and are open to future partnerships with First Nations, Inuit, and Métis people in the spirit of truth, reconciliation, and collaboration. Hello, dear listener. Starting in mid-July, I've decided to take a metaphorical hike through the mountain of a popular meme that circles the religious right today. Along the journey, I've discovered a disturbing fear-based but familiar code, which I first came across on Matt Walsh's X feed shortly after January 6th, 2021. The words in this coded meme go something like this: be a rebel, get married, start a family, love Jesus, teach your kids to think for themselves, buy land, turn off the news, and refuse to live in fear. Now, over the past couple of weeks, we discussed the historic origins of marriage. We also went over the kinds of marriages that are acceptable in this evangelical code. Today, we're going to discuss the idea of starting a family. And of course, this one's going to need a bit of a disclaimer because some of the discussion is going to cover some very recent and very heavily polarizing topics. Welcome to Spirituality Challenge, dear listener. I am your host, Aaron Parsons. On this podcast, we uncover the rarely discussed history and expose sources behind controversial Christian ideologies while uncovering hidden intentions behind the religious right. We try to cover as much ground within an hour on one topic in each episode, so sit back, relax, and prepare to be challenged. Before we jump in, dear listener, I just want to note that I'm highly aware that some of you who are listening today are parents that are deeply in love with and invested in your kids. And I'm going to most likely use an offensive word here that will make singles, childless couples, and parents alike very uncomfortable. To be perfectly honest, I've never been in a rush to have kids, and I still don't want kids. So let me get straight out the gate here and tell you that I'm an anti-natalist. Natalism is the idea that in order to preserve a nation or a cultural movement, two people must have biological children or they aren't contributing to the culture or social group that they're a part of. In my opinion, this is a bunch of BS, and I believe that the best way to contribute to a society is by enhancing the physical and mental health of the community one is a part of. And people can do that with simple tasks, from volunteering to teach children a life skill, to giving food away, to posting thought-provoking content online, which none of that is virtue signaling, but that's another discussion. The idea that children are going to be what saves us or our families is not only using children as pawns in a culture war or great replacement version of chess, but it also teaches kids that they'll find little meaning in life outside of reproduction and religion. And here at Spirituality Challenged, we believe that everyone deserves to figure out what life and the purpose of life is for themselves, which is one reason why I gave the podcast that title in the first place. Because one of the biggest challenges that spiritual people face is to figure out how far their spirituality is going to purposefully take them in the first place. And figuring that out when it comes to family is everyone's right, whether they agree with me and what I say on this podcast, or they completely disagree and want to stop listening altogether. I want to begin by playing a quote from Matthew Remsky of the Conspirituality Podcast, who gives us a good quote on August 3rd regarding what I want to talk about today.
And of course, I knew that it stood for socially and fiscally conservative positions, but it confused me with its vagueness. I mean, what families were they talking about? It made me think of the opening line of Tolstoy's Anna Karenina. All happy families are alike, but each unhappy family is unhappy in its own way. And the joke there, of course, is that he's going to be going on for 800 pages describing a very unhappy family, but in such relatable terms that it becomes impossible for any reader to imagine all those happy families somewhere, all alike, as being more than fantasy. But it doesn't take much for that fantasy of happy families to reveal its shallow nature. One learns about gendered labor, about how deeply siblings can hate each other, about intergenerational abuse. One learns that stranger danger is a massive cover-up for the fact that child abuse and child sexual abuse happens within the family for the most part. It becomes clear that the satanic panic was a massive backlash against women with children moving into the workforce. One can learn that the nuclear family is the social reproductive unit of the bourgeoisie. And if one is paying any attention at all, one learns that those who crow loudest about family values usually have a lot of family problems. At this point, it seems to me that the appeal to family values does the same labor that all conservative rhetoric does. It tries to conceal a really unpleasant truth. It's a deflection from the fact that families are often all we have and all we know. They are crucial to our survival and identities, but they are also often brutal, non-consensual power constellations from which we can never fully escape. And how much must the freedom-loving American hate that? And so, what do you do to the walls of a prison you can't quite name for the shame of it? You wallpaper them with stories and myths. And all of this hits even harder in a culture that centers its religious imagination on the image of a crucified man, the child and son of God himself, whose torturous death somehow represents freedom.
So this particular quote from Remsky was delivered in context of GOP candidate for vice president J.D. Vance and his Catholic views on natalism. He stated at one point that women who are not married and don't have kids who vote Democrat are very angry cat ladies, and if they don't have children biologically, they have no stake in the United States. Essentially, if you don't have a nuclear family, you aren't a real American. So, where does this thinking come from? Let's start by understanding what a nuclear family is. Typically, it consists of two parents and their children living together, a structure that became prominent in the mid-20th century. Historically, American families were much larger and more interconnected, often including extended family members like grandparents, aunts, and uncles living under one roof, a few miles down the road, or in a cabin down by the river. This setup provided a safety net for the most vulnerable members of society, especially the elderly during tough times. We also need to understand that the evolution of the family structures in America and how they've been shaped by several key historical moments and societal changes are pivotal to this particular context in the Rebel Code. So, in the late 18th to early 19th century, the shift from agricultural societies to industrialized cities led to changes in family roles. Families moved from extended multi-generational households on farms to nuclear families in the city, where economic roles became much more specialized. Between the end of World War II and the Civil Rights Movement, there was a cultural idealization of the nuclear family, characterized by a male breadwinner and a stay-at-home mother. In our last episode, we referred to this structure as a complementarian marriage, which is also what J.D. Vance wants to reduce families to once the GOP takes over the United States once again. This period saw a rise in marriage rates and a supposed decline in divorce rates, creating a perception of stability and prosperity. And then, the civil rights movement took off, with the rise of feminism challenging traditional gender roles, advocating for women's rights including the right to work and make independent choices. This movement contributed to more women and eventually folks of other genders entering the workforce and seeking autonomy, which altered family dynamics. The cultural shifts of the 1960s and the 70s embraced individualism and self-expression, leading to a re-evaluation of family structures, which led to an increase in divorce rates, common law living arrangements, and the acceptance of single-parent families. From the 70s until today, economic pressures, including wage stagnation and the decline of manufacturing jobs, have made it more challenging for single-income families to thrive. This has led to a rise in dual-income households and alternative family structures. Ever since the 80s, changes in laws regarding marriage, divorce, and child custody have influenced family structures as well. The legalization of same-sex marriage and increased acceptance of LGBTQA+ communities and families have further diversified the definition of the family. And of course, we gotta cover the rise of technology and social media. This has also caused transformation to how families communicate and connect. It has also facilitated new forms of family arrangements, such as blended families and families formed through adoption or assisted reproductive technologies such as IVF. Today, the ongoing shift towards hyper-individualism has led to a growing acceptance of various family forms, including single-parent households, blended families, and communal living. Economic pressures continue to shape family dynamics, with many families seeking support networks beyond traditional structures such as the nuclear family. These historic moments collectively illustrate how family structures have evolved from large interconnected units to more diverse and individualized forms, reflecting broader societal changes in values, economics, and culture. The nuclear family served a purpose, but it also left many feeling isolated. The current trend is moving towards more communal living arrangements, where families are reimagined to include broader networks of support. But when it comes to the recent comments on pronatalism, the cultural shift brought challenges to trad groups, Christians, and the political right when it came to redefining what family means in the 21st century. So reflecting on the rebel code, starting a family doesn't actually mean starting any kind of family structure. It means starting the complementarian kind of family. If the family started as two dads, two moms, step-parents, or only has a single parent, it's a family that, according to J.D. Vance, has no stake in the U.S. Most traditional families believe that a child needs a mother to be the heart of the family in order for the kids to receive love, compassion, and nourishment, while the child also needs a father who can protect the family and enforce order, discipline, and control. If even one of those components is missing, according to conservatism, the child will grow up to be a maladjusted adult. This is what I hear when I talk to conservatives about family values, or what I see parents getting upset about when it comes to kids being unruly, or teens doing drugs, questioning their gender, or having sex before they turn 18. Conservatives and evangelicals also feel that kids who do not grow up in a traditional nuclear family will end up becoming radical liberals who will become part of a blended family, a polyamorous family, or they'll be single parents or parents who can't keep their kids in line with gentle parenting techniques. All this has been proven false based on what Remsky states in the Conspirituality episode when it comes to all families being messy. But let me share another theory behind this. Behind the idea that children have to be raised right, sexually pure, and to espouse traditional family values, the most powerful populist voices also want to ensure that society is run economically in a certain way. Otherwise, the capitalist hellscape we're in is going to end. Let's expand on the idea that Remsky shared regarding the nuclear family as the societal, social, reproductive unit of the bourgeoisie. But first, let's take a break. Welcome back, dear listener. Let me begin this part by saying that I heard a pastor say that the family has been a cornerstone of the Christian faith for many generations, which I disagree with, of course. I've also been hearing statements like we need to have a family, or children need a family, or it's God's will to have children ad nauseum in every single discourse about Christian family that I've been in, especially when it comes to quote-unquote protecting the children. While I'm going to address in the next episode how the heteronuclear family is the default family accepted in evangelicalism, and how according to many folks like James Dobson, the family is what keeps the nation strong, I'd like to address in this episode my view of how a nuclear family is part of the agenda that is neoliberal capitalism. In my research of this idea, I've come to the conclusion that society in itself doesn't want to remove religions from society because of natalism in itself. I believe the system, whether it's governments, the economy, corporations, or the police state, they really desperately need the family, and I mean the nuclear family, in order for society to function. So let's start with what we know already. We live in an advanced society where power in itself affects how the system is organized. The system in this society tells us that the family is a place to receive love and emotional fulfillment. Intimate love and connection, according to the system, can only be found in a nuclear family. When a child becomes an adult or graduates college and gets a job, they are encouraged to leave that family eventually and then form a family of their own after getting into a heterosexual marriage. But why the nuclear family? The nuclear family is not just widely accepted in religions. It's also highly accepted as the default family structure in the system itself ever since the 1950s. It's still the default family discussed when teaching school children, at least where I used to live in Midwestern Canada. Most family and marriage laws in every branch of government surround the nuclear family, because corporations and capitalism need the nuclear family as lifeblood to keep us as a society going. This is exactly why churches still exist, because they need pastors and populist thought leaders in order to ensure that corporations and governments stay alive. Another point to address is that the nuclear family is a perfect mechanism for producing obedient workers. And those workers have to marry other workers and create more workers. This is one of the big reasons why sex has been pushed in our advertising, especially in the 80s and 90s. Dividing us up into smaller nuclear families after reproducing creates competition in capitalism. As a result, families need to compete with each other instead of working together as a collective to help the most vulnerable in their communities. So because in a family, the man is the head of the complementarian household, hierarchy and male authority are normalized and conditioned into the traditional nuclear family. The systemic approach to forming families consistently leads to the normalization of sexism and inequality between men, women, and children. Women are encouraged to stay home and raise the children unpaid or selling Avon while men go to work at the office. As a result of complementarian roles in the system's version of the nuclear family, the system is permitted to police sexuality within society. That way, when we keep things heterosexual, birth rates will still exist. The idea of traditional family is one of the first social structures used to reject marginalized individuals, especially in the LGBTQA+ community. To prove this, a philosopher once said that heterosexuality is a politically assisted procreation technology. In other words, if certain kind of sexuality in the system doesn't produce workers for Fortune 500 corporations, it must be eventually outlawed. That's why the people running our system eventually will try and get rid of birth control via things like Project 2025, for example. Ever since Roe v. Wade was undone, the people in the system never stopped at ending abortions. Part of this agenda is all about ensuring that capitalists, billionaires, and corporations don't run out of staff. Heterosexuality being embossed into law is only one way for the government and the church combined to police the sexuality of the proletariat. It is also a way to police how individuals, especially women with goals and ambitions for themselves, want to live out their lives. It's a way the system tries to regulate how we socialize and how the system itself builds social structures. The problem is that if we're stuck with only the nuclear family being the only kind of family structure of this system, then it is going to result in more violence, more inequality, more abuse, and more moral panics and culture wars from the alt-right. So to officially summarize this concept, the nuclear family as a social reproductive unit of the bourgeoisie can be understood through several key points that highlight its roles in maintaining and perpetuating the social and economic status of the upper class. Number 1. The nuclear family, typically consisting of two parents and their children, serves as a stable economic unit. In bourgeois society, this structure allows for the concentration of wealth and resources within a single household, facilitating the transfer of capital and property across generations. This economic stability helps preserve the social status of the bourgeoisie. Number 2. The nuclear family plays a crucial role in socializing children into the values, norms, and behaviors that align with bourgeois culture. Children raised in nuclear families are often taught the importance of individualism, competition, and the pursuit of higher education, which are essential for maintaining their class position and achieving upward mobility, although the higher education part is very much debatable recently. Number 3. Within the nuclear family, traditional gender roles are often reinforced, with the complementarian male as the breadwinner and the complementarian female as the caregiver. This division of labor not only supports the economic model of the family, but also perpetuates the patriarchal structures that benefit the bourgeoisie. By maintaining these roles, the nuclear family helps to stabilize the social order that privileges the upper and middle classes. Number 4. The nuclear family structure tends to isolate individuals from extended family networks, which were more common in pre-industrial societies, as I mentioned before. This isolation can limit the influence of communal support systems that might challenge bourgeois values and norms, allowing the nuclear family to function as a more controlled environment for social reproduction. Number 5. The nuclear family has been idealized in bourgeois culture as the norm, often portrayed in media and literature as the epitome of happiness and success. This cultural narrative reinforces the desirability of the nuclear family structure, making it a standard that many aspire to, thereby perpetuating the social order that benefits the bourgeoisie. Number 6. The nuclear family model allows for greater control over reproductive choices, which can be strategically aligned with economic interests. For the bourgeoisie, this means having the ability to plan family size and invest in the education and upbringing of fewer children, ensuring that they can maintain their social and economic advantages. Although when it comes to couples who believe in the Great Replacement conspiracy theory, they believe that having as many kids as they can afford will keep their values and race from being overrun by foreigners that they find uncomfortable. Number 7. The nuclear family is often linked to conservative political ideologies that advocate for the preservation of traditional family structures. This political alignment serves to protect the interests of the bourgeoisie by resisting social changes that might threaten their economic power or social status. So, in summary, the nuclear family functions as a social reproductive unit by providing economic stability, socializing children into class-specific values, reinforcing complementarian gender roles, and maintaining cultural ideals that support the existing social order. This structure not only helps to preserve the privilege of the middle class and the 1%, but it also shapes the broader societal landscape in ways that favor their continued dominance. So, how do we get past this? How do we stop the division caused by nuclear families? The solution here is to keep on encouraging and continually forming alternative social structures. The nuclear family is one of the only kinds of families that is legally and socially accepted, even with progressive voices being as loud as they are. We have to encourage more alternative kinds of families, clubs, and communities, and we have to make sure they're formed, because those kind of groups may be the only way out for certain marginalized people stuck in abusive situations. There needs to be alternative groups of people where significance, security, love, support, and real unconditional love are encouraged. Churches can never, ever fully do this, in my experience, because when one really looks at how neoliberalism works, churches are actually a big part of the system and its natural ways of marginalizing many vulnerable groups, even without them being aware that they're doing it. Imagine what the world would be like if other kinds of families of love and belonging, beyond the nuclear family, became the norm. We'd not only have more people to love, encourage, connect with, and support in this hellscape of a post-pandemic world, but we'd also wouldn't need to consume so much useless garbage. We'd be less isolated. We'll have more support systems. We'll reject the system structure of living that's offered to us by capitalists who do not have our best interests at heart. We'll reject their money-making agenda. We'll reject supporting their unresolved insecurities. And we'll be able to have all the resources we need without having to be burdened by unlimited choices that come from competition and capitalism. So there's an old meme that's still going around today, and I'm going to close the episode with this. The caption of this meme says, "Stop saying start a family when you mean have kids. A couple is still a family. A single person with a cat is a family. A couple and their plants are still a family. Three weirdly close roommates could be a family. You don't need kids to be a family. And we definitely don't need the system or evangelicals telling us what a nuclear family is, just to ensure that their way of life keeps going."